Fellow Freedom fans, David Alan Carmichael, Preservative Talk Radio. It's my Faith and Freedom Show, engaging the issues of the day from a constitutional basis, biblical basis, basis of right versus wrong. I was doing a cheery subject before we went to the break. Hey, by the way, I was checking. I listened to the advertisements during the break. Delia's. Guess it used to be called a taqueria or something like that. But yeah, it's a Mexican restaurant. Great reviews. I was just shocked. There was, on one website, there were 25 reviews, a whole bunch of them, and they were all extremely positive, so that's something to think about. Before I went to the break, I was talking about the Communist Manifesto, and again, when I watched presidential debates and hear statements, that because I've done my homework, I know what where it's going. And take note. Notice what he said. There was justification. I'm just saying, if one candidate says something, it's basically appealing to the people's fears, wants and fears, is demagoguery, appealing to these fears. Oh my goodness, what, the sky is going to fall if we don't do the following thing. Oh my goodness, we haven't been taught to think critically. It's kind of thing, if they said in a courtroom, it is, strike that statement. That is complete hypothetical speculation, has nothing to do with what we ought to be considering here. But the people that are watching TV aren't thinking that way. So what you don't know is there is indeed, if somebody says they're a progressive, they're not looking toward progress. They're looking to progressively institute communism. That's the goal. That's what the progressive is. It's certain language, like you hear this term proletariat and bourgeoisie and all that. What is that stuff? It's language. But when they use a term like progressive, that you think it means introducing or interested in progress, I say, well, those guys just want to take us backwards. Yeah, we've got further to down the slippery slope, now accelerating into communism, and they're trying to stop it. That's the kind of thing that you need to think about. And I'll tell you, you're not hearing that. There's not so many people being accused of taking you backwards anymore, are there? Well, they're all kind of on the same slippery slope in a lot of ways. That's why you hear people say that the two parties are doing the same thing, just dancing around the same object there. So here it is, the Communist Manifesto. Karl Marx and Frederick Engels are saying, hey, what's this? Why are you complaining because the communists want free love? No more husband, no more wife. You see that happening around, don't you? Hey, Jim Bob and whatever, you know, if you've got two guys getting married, who's the husband, who's the wife? That's a common law crime. It's a natural crime. It's a biblical crime. So, but we're going to make it a civil right, as if it's, even though it's wrong in every higher law, we're going to, the little positive law, make it a right instead of a wrong. Now, who's the husband? Who's got the rights of the husband? Who's got the rights of a wife? Well, we got the communist free love thing. It doesn't matter. So here we go. He has not even suspicion that a real point aimed at is to do away with the status of women as mere instruments of production. Oh, it doesn't matter that we're destroying the family and the fabric of society. We're trying to make sure that women aren't mere instruments of production. And what's happening, we're finding our women as mere instruments of production the further we go down this slope. For the rest, nothing is more ridiculous than the virtuous indignation of our bourgeois at the community of women, which they pretend is to be openly and officially established by the communists. The communists have no need to introduce free love. It has existed almost from time immemorial. And the bourgeois marriage in reality is a system of wives in common. At the most, what the communists might possibly reproach with is that they desire to introduce in substitution for a hypocritically concealed and openly legalized system of free loves. In other words, all we believe, because we believe that all the bourgeoisie are really swapping wives all the while, and it's just in the closet of their own little social club, we're just going to make sure it's legally and openly celebrated throughout society. Believe it or not, this is in the Communist Manifesto. This is what they're selling. This is what a progressive is trying to progress to. Admit it or not, if you connect the dots and do the homework and read the speeches over the last many decades, this is exactly what's going on. And the crazy thing is, what I'm saying is news to most people. The communists are further reproached with desiring to abolish countries and nationality. That's what's happening. United Nations, rights of the child, rights of the disabled. I communicated with a senator recently, and I need to I got to respond to his response. And he was saying, oh, it's just going to really help help America be, you know, motivated to do the right thing. No, it won't, buddy. You're going to have a little committee, a little Politburo somewhere else telling parents what they can and can't do with their children because of, oh my goodness, this parent isn't doing what the state would want. It's happening before our very eyes. National differences, okay, let's see. But that's communism's further reproach by desiring to abolish countries and nationality. They're very open about it. They don't believe that communism is really limited within national boundaries. It is a brotherhood of humanity. In fact, so in other words, it supersedes, it is the authority over laws of nations. God is no longer the authority over laws of nations. It would be the communist. And this is absolutely true. I mean, and so you're going to see policies where the boundaries of law and the Constitution have to be undermined. They have to be discounted. They have to be neutralized. They have to be ignored. But we've got to do this for the following reasons. Those are the kind of answers I saw last night in the debate. Well, we've got to do this way because we fear this. What if this happens? Well, you don't know it's going to happen. But I've got to violate the law. I've got to take over the banks. I've got to undermine bankruptcy laws and take possession of Chrysler's property. The stockholders of Chrysler have this property. We're gonna confiscate it and give it to fiat by fiat because we fear. That's what's been happening the last few years. Haven't you noticed this stuff? It's not being said this way in the news. That's what's going on. Toll free, 888-248-2046. Sorry to be so cheery today. Ay, ay, ay. I guess if you're doing surgery, you know, there's a certain amount of pain involved. And the only thing that'll make this a little bit better is a little opiate of the masses, religion. A little bit of faith makes this medicine go down just a little bit easier. Okay. I'm just going to stop there because I'm depressing myself. I brought something up yesterday. I asked a woman on a radio program. I said, has anything major catastrophe happened to you like the Katrina wipeout kind of thing and you actually needed somebody to come in for you and save you? Well, I never haven't. But what if because of these fears, she was willing to brace that, which she admittedly agreed and it was the current administration president of the United States and some of his policies, she admitted were just completely contrary to the fabric of America, the fabric of the American system of law and government and the protection of society. She knew she was abandoning that because of her fears. And then I pointed out to her, she's never really experienced having to be saved, having a catastrophe. I have experienced catastrophe. I've saved people from their catastrophe. Not as a government agent, but as a minister of God for their good in the community. Doing what I ought to do because I have to love God and love my neighbor as myself. I watched millions of people get saved by the church, by the congregation, the fellowship of those who are in Jesus. Sacrifice their lives. You know, they're basically took their fortunes and their situation, inconvenienced themselves to save millions on that 80 to 100 mile stretch of a beach that got flooded. It wasn't just New Orleans, folks. It was the entire Gulf Coast from Mobile Bay through the tip of Louisiana. And people got saved, not by FEMA. Now, I'll tell you what happened after the fact. FEMA came in after the dust had cleared a little bit. And then people started getting a windfall by government giveaways. They started to go sign up for the government benefit. Outside the constitutional boundaries and the purpose of government, they all signed up, got small business loans, even though they weren't a small business. And some of them were a certain party that decries socialism, all that kind of stuff. And they were just signing up. But I won't get this benefit. Okay, don't get the benefit. So my question was, have you really ever needed to be saved? Now, I'll tell you my story. I just have a zillion of them. So I got, well, Yeah, let me tell you, I'll tell you a real quick story. I was in a situation where I was out of a job, and it was because of my faith, my Christian faith. And basically, I took the hit. I had to obey God, and I lost my job. Okay, that was a result. Unemployment. Now, when that happened, I had $3,400 in the bank, had a mortgage, had three children at the time, a wife, three children. And I thought I was going to die. Okay, God, I obeyed you. Now I'm going to die. And one day I drove past a guy who was poor. He actually was about $1,700 shy of actually paying for his house. So he had gotten that from his parents. And so he was doing fairly good, but he was a beggar. He just had this compulsion. He begged, you know. So he was walking to work one day. And I normally, when I had money and a real job, I'd pick him up and give him a ride to work. And I thought, there he is. He's got a job. He's going to hit me up for money. And I'm in a bad situation. I got a mortgage. I got kids. In fact, at the time, I only had a mortgage payment in an envelope and then $5. Now, what I'd done is taken them. I think I'd taken $50 out of the mortgage envelope because my car was doing badly. What if I got stranded someplace? But so, and I thought, man, I've got to give this guy is $5, you know, $5 bill. Because if I pick him up and give him a ride to work, he's going to hit me up for money. And I was mad. So I picked him up, gave him a ride to work. I can't go because I'm out of time here. So I was fighting with God about giving this guy money. Sure enough, we get to his work. He says, hey, you know, I was hoping to get a cup of coffee before I go into work here. And he says, you think you have any money you could spare? And I said, how's $5? Right. And he goes, oh, that'd be great. Now, the bad thing was I figured I had, So I say, how about $5, right? So I offered my $5. I get my wallet out, and guess what? I thought the $5 was with the wallet. I actually left the $5 at home. The only thing I had was the money in my wallet. I had two 20s and a 10. The smallest thing I had was a $10 bill. And I did the evil thing, and I knew he had money, and I did the evil thing. I said, well, can you make change? And yes, he started going for his change. So he had money. It was evil for me. I said, don't worry about it. Just here. So I actually gave him 10. So now, in spite of my despising this man who I used to love, but now I'm fearful, I'm afraid I'm not going to survive, that God's not going to save me, I realize I'm now, for the first time in my life, really in need. I'm $5 short of my mortgage payment. $5 short of my mortgage payment and no job. And tough story here. But then some things started happening. I get a check in the mail. And guess what? One America was a check that comes once a month. It was $68. Now I got to figure out how to tithe it. I got to check. How do I tithe $68.78? Do I give $6.88? That's weird. How about 10? And then all of a sudden I realize, you know what? If I don't get 10 times 68.88 or whatever it was, I'm going to die. And all of a sudden it hit me. You know what? What I need to do is give away the $68.78 as a tithe for the 10 times this that I need to get. All of a sudden my thinking started changing. This that I'm clinging to is not going to save me. And the more I cling to this, the less I'll be saved. Folks, our freedom is going to come in proportion to our faith. Maybe I'll tell you the rest of the story of what happened after I started doing some faith behavior, believing that there is a sovereign almighty God who has a desire to intervene in our lives. Tell you what I'm going to do. We've got some high school sports that are going to be happening tomorrow during this hour. I encourage you to listen to that. We come back on Monday. I'm going to read to you from something that Benjamin Franklin said when he was 81 years old in public. So I'll bring that back on Monday. We're going to talk about this aspect of faith. Our freedom's going to come in proportion to our faith. And it's not just faith whimsically. Oh, hope for the best. No, know what the best is and trust in it. So we'll come back to that on Monday. David Allen Carmichael. This is Preservative Talk Radio, my faith and freedom show. You can go to preservativetalkradio.com and find out more. You can contact me. Give us a call at our office at 757-320-2220. It's on the website. Or you can give us a toll-free call at 888-248-2046. Again, preservativetalkradio.com or the archives at preservativetalkradio.net. We'll be back on Monday.